clap your hands.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
CRN Studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder. I'm going to guide us through this hour of talk, banter, racing history, and all those things that we do and here on this show, that we've been doing on this show.
For 10 years.
Many have tried, okay, but none look as good doing it as we do. You know what I mean? You know?
If you don't believe it, just ask us.
Yeah. 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 Just none of them look as good doing it as we do. Anyway, here we are. We're coming up on Christmas 2017. Man, can you believe it? That's crazy. Racers Reunion will be 10 years old in 1 month and 10 days.
You got it down to the day?
Yep. January 22nd.
Wow.
January 22nd, 2008, is when it was born. And that was immediately after an event at Memory Lane Museum over in Mooresville, where I went, and there was like 70 race car drivers in there, and people lined up to see them, and decided that we needed to do something to connect all those people to the fans that wanted to see them. And I'll tell you something. We've talked about this probably 100 times in 10 years. I'm going to talk about it again. One of the things that made me think somebody needs to do something was the lady talking to Dink Widenhouse. And we were there. Sam Ard was there. Bobby Allison, Ned Jarrett, Dave Marcus. I mean, there's 70 drivers there. Anybody you can think of. There's video still existing on the website and on YouTube of that day that I was over there. And there were people, it was snowing outside, and there was people lined up all the way outside the front door to go around that room and get autographs. And I watched this lady pass everybody in line. And most people were, you know, going to the first person at the table and going around. And she walked by everybody and got way ahead of everybody, and she went to this fella. They had U-shaped tables in there that day, all the way around the room in that back room. There's a fella in the middle over there where the back door is. And this lady went straight to him. And she had something in her hand, and she's standing there talking to him and showing him that thing. And I saw this guy sign what she had. And I thought, man, there's a story right there. I got to go find out what's going on. So I went over there and talked to that lady. And I said, ma'am, I watched you pass everybody in this row right here and walk over to that fellow right there and get his autograph. You passed up all these guys to go to him. Can you tell me why? She said, well, that's Dink Widenhouse. She said, I see Bobby Allison, Ned Jarrett out here and around all the time. I hadn't seen Dink in 30 years. So I went over and I interviewed Dink, and he just couldn't believe that somebody remembered him and remembered the details of races that he ran, you know, as well as he did. And it occurred to me then that all these guys that raced back then and didn't know if anybody knew or cared where they were, there was thousands of people out there that wanted to know where he was. So she had seen Dink's name in the newspaper as being someone who's coming to that event. Somebody's got the radio player.
Yeah, they do. I don't know who it could
find. So that was the story among, I mean, there was quite a few stories there. Dick, oh man, my mind just went blank.
Richardson?
No. Passed away 3-4 years ago. I'll think of it in a minute. He was there, and he kept talking about somebody needs to do this. Somebody needs to document this history. It seemed like everybody was talking to me, you know. So I went home and created Racers Reunion, and here we are. Named it after Racers Reunion that existed over in Jonesboro for years and years and years. You know, Paul Lewis had that event, and went, talked to him, got his permission, and he agreed with it that we were going to call what we were doing Racers Reunion, where legends and fans unite. So there, 10 years later, we're still here. So
whether y'all like it or not.
Yeah.
We do. We are.
Yep. Thanks for being here. We love you. Mean it. So I guess we'll talk about that a lot more next year, being that it's going to be, we're going to be celebrating our 10th year anniversary. And going through a lot of those things that we did that first year. That first year was really an active year in the second year, you know, for us too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we had that famous Christmas party. We had the Columbia Speedway Racers Reunion.
Two famous Christmas
parties. Yeah, we had those famous Christmas parties.
Actually, there might have been three. One of them was a remote location.
Yeah, one of them we had at
the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I think it was a Waldorf. Yeah. Now that I mentioned, remember. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, man, it's cool. It's kind of cool to think about that. Here we are. So, what's going on in the racing world? We were talking about that before we went on the air about things happening. People are talking about going to Daytona to the Vintage Parade. And Jack, you told me about a race for Myrtle Beach Speedway that's on YouTube that we can watch.
Yeah, you can watch the Myrtle Beach 400 on YouTube. The whole, I think it was brought down to like an hour and a half. I don't know how long the actual race was, even though I went to it. But it's on YouTube, and check it out.
That's pretty cool.
Old MAV broadcast.
That's pretty cool right there, man.
Yeah, it is.
Needs to be something for us to watch.
Yeah, Bill
during
Hennessy.
During this off season.
Bill Hennessy and a couple other guys.
He sounds familiar. We know him.
Yeah, we had him on here.
Oh, yeah. That's that guy. That guy.
So check it out.
Yeah. Cool beans.
Matter of fact, I'll find the link to it and put it up on our chat line.
Oh, that'd be great.
That will be good.
That'd be great. That'd be great, man. Cool. Speaking of chat line, I haven't put the video up on the website yet. I'll do that. Y'all talk about something while I go do that.
Well, who all's planning on going to Daytona for the Vintage Parade?
I'm going.
Bobby's still on the fence.
Yeah,
We've got a couple of the rest of them that of our Bell & Bell Vintage modified people that are considering going.
It's always a great time, a lot of good fellowship with some of the old drivers, some of the old cars that have been recreated to honor the old drivers.
Yep.
There's a lot of drivers there at the North Turn in the restaurant.
Jack, there was a picture you took the last time all of us went was in 2016, and we stopped at that rest stop in around Savannah or something. Did you see that?
Yeah. Dargan recently put that up. Dargan, that was a good picture, wasn't it?
Dargan rejuvenated it.
That was kind of a fun.
Hey, Dargan will put a picture up now.
Oh, yeah.
Dargan's got some pictures, I'll tell you what.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Anyway, he put up that one, and the thing was, Miss Nina Cox said, "Is that Earl Moss?"
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, she was serious.
Well, I know she's seen your car before.
Is that Earl Moss? That was a supreme compliment.
Yep. So, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, going to and from the parade is a lot of fun because it really creates a spectacle going down the highway with six or eight of these old vintage cars on open trailers.
Yeah.
Everybody, you're riding along in not necessarily the slow lane, but you can't make a lot of time pulling a race car. And you realize that as the cars go drifting by, about two-thirds of the cars, there's somebody hanging out the right window taking pictures with a cell phone or a camera or waving to you or pointing at the cars.
2015, we was getting into the edge of Jacksonville, and a Humpy Wheeler comes flying by everybody in that Hudson. acted like he didn't know us, flew on by, and then caused the biggest traffic jam in the world.
It broke down right in the middle of Jacksonville. Broke down on a bridge.
She vapor locked.
But who in the world would build, I don't care if it is a vintage or a reproduction, who in the world would tie the fuel line to the damn heater hose?
It was made at some kind of NASCAR technical institute in Charlotte, some kind of high
and
end.
And they zip tied the fuel line to one of the heater hoses.
Have y'all seen Cars 3, the movie? The Disney Pixar.
I haven't seen one or two either.
Well, it sounds crazy, but you will be impressed. The second one isn't very good. They really missed the boat. The second one sort of delved into the Formula One type of thing. But Cars 1 and 3 is very historically related. You will recognize, especially number 3, the historical significance. The cars themselves are the characters.
Yeah.
And there's one called, and all of them, he's sort of the grand old patriarch, is Doc Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks, his car looks exactly like the Humpy Wheeler car, same, painted up and everything.
And of course, Humpy goes to the vintage parade every year. And
yep.
He's around Daytona. And a lot of people there. And you guys ought to stay and go Monday to the Back to the Roots deal.
I'm not smart enough to understand the Daytona vintage dynamics. I can't. There's at least two groups, and all of them have everything going on at the same time, right. Except it's all different.
Yeah, they don't want to talk to one another or coordinate.
Yeah, yeah. There's several different events for vintage cars down there.
Yep, they're all the same and they're all different and I can't never remember who's what.
The Back to the Roots deal is a little different. They have a bunch of drivers in the back room there, and you can go back and get autographs and talk to them and that type of thing. There's probably had 15 or 20 of them last year. You know, people like Johnny Allen and people like that. It was pretty cool.
So then the other one is the Living Legends of Auto Racing. Yep. That's the other group. Which one are we in?
Do we know?
Which one does the parade?
It's not that one.
It's not Living Legends. It's the other one.
Yeah.
I think that's the Living Legends. Back to the Roots is the other one, isn't it?
I'll be dogged if I know.
All I know is I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was great.
One of them meets at Bill Francis old station.
Yep. That's Back to the Roots.
That's Back to the Roots.
Yeah. But Facebook pages aren't accessible right now. I can't get on any of them. So I can't post the video. So sorry about that. Mark Zuckerberg is the one you need to call, not me.
Must be something political.
Yep.
the challenge of the vintage parade, and it's had a lot of growth and a lot of interest, and it's relatively short history, but the challenge of the whole thing is trailer parking. That is the thing. Not just for the event, but at motels, you know, that accommodate the racers.
And be able to afford all those upscale motels.
Yeah. If you don't have, and none of them really have trailer parking.
Got to pay extra for the roaches. That's the entertainment.
Yeah. And the deteriorating concrete columns and the.
Those are palmetto bugs.
And people
being from South Carolina, you should know that.
People North stealing, Carolina has them too.
Are palmetto bugs in the roach family, though, really? I mean,
I don't know.
They look like giant roaches.
They certainly look like giant roaches.
Yeah.
But, the police station at Ponce Inlet is sort of the parking area for the vintage parade, and it is a very small facility.
Yep.
You get caught trucks and trailers. We've always got there.
And there's nobody there. I would appreciate it if there'd be somebody there from the police department says, you park here, because some of them take up more room than they should.
No.
Yes.
Huh.
They could get some more in there if they would.
I'm not there on the scene and everything, but I know that is probably the biggest challenge of the vintage parade is the trailer parking thing. and maybe even more so with the motel. There's no motel that's going to guarantee.
Well, that was the one good thing about that Roach Palace. Is they did welcome you to park your
trailer. They welcomed anything.
Well, they didn't. They, yeah, of course, had it not been for our group, they wouldn't have had any patrons at all.
Except the ones stealing the recliner.
Oh,
that's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's the flea bag recliner.
Oh no.
You know, it may be renovated if y'all go. If we go this time, she may look new.
Could be, man.
That was 2 years ago.
It might be a real palace.
Yeah.
All right. Jack, you've got a Carolina race place?
I do. We're going back to one of our favorite tracks this week, going back to South Boston Speedway.
Cool.
I like South Boston.
Sobo. Yeah.
Well, they do it. You know, when you're looking at some of these results from the old days, so to speak, it's interesting that some tracks had good publicity people that sent results and things like that to the race magazines and to the newspapers, and others did a lousy job and didn't do anything, or two or three lines. Yeah. So it's interesting. In South Boston, I don't know who the guy was, but he wrote a lot of good stuff, and there's a lot of records that go down in history because of that. So that'll be coming up.
All right, cool. Mm.
You want me to do it now?
Want you to do it now?
Oh, heck, I was just...
Yeah, we waiting for it.
I was just doing a tease. I didn't know it was coming.
Well, okay, you've done your tease. Now you can do the whole show. I mean, your segment.
I can jump right on it, man. It's not a problem at all. South Boston Speedway, 300-lap modified race, South Boston, Virginia, May 19, 1968. Hmm.
The Wayback Machine.
Well, it's not that far back for me. On Sunday, May 19th, 1968, South Boston Speedway ran a 300-lap modified race on the 3/8-mile paved oval. The modified race was the feature event, and in fact, in 1968, they still raced modifieds every week at South Boston. That same day, there was also a 35-lap late model sportsman race. The opening race that day was the 35-lap late model sportsman event, won by Eddie Royster, driving a 1965 Chevelle. Royster was followed by Jimmy Griffin in a 64 Chevelle and Sonny Hutchins in a 63 Ford Fairlane. When it came time for the big 300-lap modified race, Ray Hendrick started from the pole position in his number 11 Jack Tant 1937 Chevy. Hendrick had won at the last three modified races at South Boston. Ray Hendrick took the lead on lap one and didn't look back. On lap 55, Runt Harris retired to the pits with the ill-handling car. The number 21 modified was the old Wood Brothers built modified Ford, which was sold to the Edwards Brothers in 1968. Harris got the ride that day because Donnie Allison, who was scheduled to drive the number 21 in the race, was a no-show. By lap 85, Ray Hendrick had lapped every car in the 30-car starting field. When it came time for Hendrick to make his pit stop on lap 206, he had a two-lap lead. He made his pit stop and rejoined the field without losing a lap or the lead. Ray Hendrick completely dominated the race, leading all 300 laps. When he crossed the finish line on lap 300, he was six laps ahead of the second place finisher, Jimmy Hensley. Hendrick won $1,200 for the victory that day at South Boston. So here's the way they finished. Again, this is 300-lap modified race, May 19, 1968, South Boston, Virginia. The winner, driving number 11, Ray Hendrick, Richmond, Virginia, in the 37 Chevy modified. Followed by Jimmy Hensley, Martinsville, Virginia, Paul Radford, Ferrum, Virginia, Perk Brown, Spray, North Carolina, Billy Hensley, Ridgeway, Virginia, Eddie Royster, Middleburg, North Carolina, Joe Thurman, Rocky Mount, Virginia.
Joe Henry Thurman.
Bob McGinnis, Danville, Virginia. Max Barrier, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Coming in 10th, Bill Dennis, Glen Allen, Virginia. Frankie Burnham, South Mill, North Carolina. Roy Van Dyke, Richmond, Virginia. Every time I say his name, I want to say something else. Like, wasn't there another famous Van Dyke?
Yeah, a couple.
The actor, what was his name? Dick Van Dyke, yeah. Sonny Hutchins, Richmond, Virginia. Robert Barrier, Wahlberg, North Carolina. Gerald Robinson, Salem, North Carolina. Ernest Palmer, Martinsville, Virginia. Jim Torrey, Newport News, Virginia. Ronnie Daniel, Lynchburg, Virginia. Mel Bradley, Richmond, Virginia. Coming in 20th, Gerald Compton, Martinsville, Virginia. Glenn McGee, Lexington, North Carolina. Al Grennan, Fredericksburg, Virginia. Don Miller, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Lenny Pond, Ettrick, Virginia. Runt Harris, Richmond, Virginia, came in 25th. Ronnie Harris, Chesapeake, Virginia. Roy Parker, Ridgeway, Virginia. Wayne Johnson, Eden, North Carolina. Wes Wright, Lynchburg, Virginia. In the 30th and final car, Ted Harefield, Richmond, Virginia. So that's the way it was. May 19th.
That was a modified race.
All modifieds.
A
lot of familiar names there.
A lot of them competed at Bowman Gray on a regular basis. Some of them didn't, but there were a lot of those.
Between Bowman and Gray, Southside and Richmond and South Boston. It was kind of like a little circuit.
Yep. Yeah. And some of them didn't come from Richmond. Some of them did, but the same way some of the Winston guys didn't go as far north as Richmond. But there were a lot of crossovers, especially when Bowman Gray ran the big races. Almost all those names were there.
I mean, this was a pretty big race when you think about it, 300 laps.
Yep.
That's a lot of.
That's kind of like having a 100-lap race at Bowman Gray.
Yeah.
And Ray Hendrick was six laps ahead of the second place car.
Total domination.
Yep, the second place car.
Wonder were there any rules in place to tear him down at the end of the race?
I don't know.
Didn't you know what everybody said when they left the race? That was a good race.
Yep, I did.
Yep.
That's what they all said.
Well,
that race that Ray Hendrick won by 6 man, good race.
In a lot of ways, Bobby, I think it goes back to what I said a couple months ago that kind of just came out of the blue. You know, back then, they usually had a scoreboard that had 5 places on it.
Yep.
And you could see who was in second, third, fourth, fifth, but you had no idea there were 6 laps behind.
Right.
I mean, you just didn't know that.
Because most all the scoreboards did not keep up with it. Exactly. It was all they could do to keep up with the first 5.
Exactly.
Much less how many laps there, that you could tell how many laps there were in the race. They usually were pretty good about keeping up with what lap the leader was on.
Yeah, that was it.
But that was it. You you had no idea how far behind 2 through the rest of the field was.
Yeah.
And after the first 10 laps, unless you were somebody like Morris Metcalf, you had no idea.
So it really kind of made the race a lot more interesting because you didn't realize that guy that was in 18th position, 25 laps down, wasn't in second or third or fourth or sixth,
like going to the NASCAR races. Yeah. Thank God for the transistor radio and the little earmuff pieces that you could kind of keep up with who your favorite driver was. It was in 18th place and how many laps down he was or not.
Wonder if Jim Torrey was part of the Butch Torrey entourage.
Yes, that's I think they're brothers.
Because they were from Newport News.
Yeah, he raced down here in Myrtle Beach.
I was looking for some Ramby-type people. Yep. Frankie Burnham, he came here a few times.
And actually, Ray Hendrick raced here once. I didn't realize that a few years ago. I don't remember ever seeing him.
I don't either.
But I saw something where he'd raced here. And he raced a lot in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of familiar names on that list. I'm just sitting here looking across Bobby's shoulder.
Yep.
Regulars on the Saturday night circuit at Bowman Gray.
Yep.
Well, Sobo and Winston-Salem isn't that far apart.
No, no.
That was doable. That was
easily doable.
Yeah, easily doable. So 1968. So the coupes were still in, still in control.
Yeah,
they would last for a few more years.
And of course, up north, they were in control probably for another 10 years at least.
NASCAR, wasn't it 1970 they made the big push to Martinsville modifieds had to be late model modified. Remember that?
Yeah.
I think that was 70.
I don't think they ever really got the late model modified thing off the ground the way they envisioned.
No, it really never existed anywhere but there, but Martinsville.
There were places that held on to the old cars for a long, long time until they finally just disappeared of their own accord because they couldn't get parts for them anymore.
Until we came along.
Until the vintage racers of
50 years
2017
later.
Started digging them out of the woods.
We came along and reinvented the wheel.
Just think of the date of that race. It will soon be 50 years old. This spring, that'll be a 50-year-old race.
Yep.
That's...
The Martinsville modified had full fenders.
Yep.
It really looked a lot like a late model sportsman, except they had wider tires and injector stacks through the hood, and Camaro bodies were usable, you know. But they didn't so much look like modifieds anymore, and NASCAR was still counting on the fact that people wanted to see cars that looked like showroom cars. That was part of that theory, which in the case of the modifieds, I don't know that was ever exactly right. That might have hurt the whole thing, because that never, like you say, that never caught on anywhere else.
I think I think Atlanta had a late model modified race
on the big track.
Yeah, on the big track. Yeah,
that's was always interesting when the big tracks would invite the modifieds. The old modifieds, I can remember, back in the 79, 80, 81, when they had modified races at Charlotte on the big track. In fact, they had a real problem with them the first time they ran them down there. They'd come down the backstretch the first time they did it at full song and go right into the third turn wall. They wouldn't turn. Those old modifieds didn't have noses of any sort on them. And of course, they had no wing on them. They just wouldn't turn. They put little pseudo wings on them, and it finally got stacks of tires and put a chicane in the backstretch just before you got to the third turn. So
now, did they
slow them down a little?
Did they run those with the late model?
No, they were. It was just a modified race.
The old style modifieds, or was it late model modifieds mixed in?
Old style open wheel, and that's all it was.
Oh, okay.
And they were really neat to watch, even on the mile and a half track. It was neat to watch, except when they wouldn't turn to hit the wall.
You know, I don't know if anyone knew this at the time, but they certainly knew the effect. Almost immediately at Daytona in the modified race, it became obvious that the old coupe, the aerodynamics was terrible for high-speed racing, because the whole thing was a lifting surface. It wasn't a downforce. It was reverse downforce. Yep. It was a lift. It was a wing.
It was a pretty perfect wing. Some of those old coupe bodies
they were
pretty,
rounded.
Pretty good wings.
In every direction, so they tended to get real squirrely.
Yeah, they got really, really light on straightaway, really light.
Yeah, so they, from the get-go, the coupes fell out of favor. At Daytona, even almost immediately, it was 56 Fords and things of that nature,
and 53 Studebakers because they are dynamics.
Yep. Yep, they were
nothing around about a 56 Ford.
No.
And the roof was as flat as a flitter.
The tail lights were round, kind of.
Yeah, but remember that race where the big crash happens? Is that 61 or 60 or something? Was the 37
60,
car?
60. Modified race at Daytona.
The leaders was Banjo, Matthews, and Fireball. I think both of them had like 55 Fords or something. 56 Fords, basically the same body. And like you say, the Studebaker, the 53 Studebaker was the most aerodynamic.
Oh, yeah, it was the most aero that they had at that time.
Yep.
It was built so much lower to the ground too than the rest of them.
And then all of a sudden it became a crossover in jalopy racing and sportsman racing. A lot of short track guys, local type guys, were building 53 Studebakers and racing them on the quarter mile dirt tracks and that type of thing.
Walt Zawoski, our friend from Wilmington, was involved with the early Daytona modified effort, and they took a 37 Ford sedan to the big track, and nobody could drive it. I mean, the front end would lift. They had somehow scheduled Fireball to drive it, and he took her out like a lap or so and got out and never looked back. But those old cars would... you know, they would just live as a lifting surf. The whole body was
the whole was body wrong. was a pretty good wing.
Yep. So that didn't take. And the other thing that was about that bad was the NASCAR convertibles almost would suck the driver out of the seat.
Oh man! And they didn't have much in the way of restraint systems in them when when 55, 6, and 7 when they were racing them. I guess the very best you had was a seat lap belt.
A lot of aero stuff was learned seat of the pants. Yep. Oh, yeah. Absolutely seat of the pants. A lot of it, I mean, they understood it, but they had to do it first, you know, to see what was going to happen.
They had to see whether or not it was going to work or not.
Yeah, I can remember a picture where there was a big funnel, a ductwork system and a modified that went from the firewall down to the floorboard of the car. Inside the car, the driver's compartment, there was this big ductwork where they had realized that air was collecting in the engine compartment. And you know where NASCAR now has them little flaps in front of the cowl
flaps
that alleviates that. But these guys had found that in the late 50s, but they was funneling it from the engine compartment to under the car. It was a big elbow that went from the firewall down to the floorboard.
That probably proved to be a problem immediately. Now it starts picking the car.
Yeah, they had solved one problem. It created
another.
Well, wasn't it Lee Petty in the 59 Daytona 500 had his exhaust pipes going right through the cockpit and out right under the trunk in the back?
Well, Junior Johnson for sure had that in 1969 with the Leroy
Yarbrough. Melted their grills, radiators.
He was trying to keep him from drafting.
Yeah.
Lee Petty supposedly picked out a 59 Oldsmobile for that race because he thought he needed a real sturdy car, a real durable, heavy built, et cetera, for that particular race, which was pretty good pretty forward thinking, you know. Yep. Who would have thought of a 59 Oldsmobile?
Yep. Tank.
Yeah.
Because they were sturdy, all right, but they weighed sure enough, ton, and then some, maybe two.
While we're on the subject of Daytona, we're kind of talking about it. We would be amiss to not recognize. We're almost on the day of the anniversary of the famous Streamline Hotel meeting, December 1947. This would be the 70th. It convened on December the 14th, which I think was a Sunday that day. That was the first that they met for 3 days, but it all began on December the 14th of 1947. So we are almost at the commemorative date. The Streamline has been rejuvenated, hasn't it, Jack? Ain't it?
Yes, I think it's back opened already. And that's on my bucket list to just walk through that next time I'm in Daytona, which is going to be in February.
that might be a...
I might get kicked out, but I'm going to walk through it see what it looks like.
That might be a good little side trip to take.
I've walked... I think when we was at the Roach Palace, we was pretty close to it. I walked down there one that time, and I think they had a chain link fence around it because it was under construction. We're lucky that it survived. You know, I think people now recognize its significance. But there was a time there were decades when it could have easily been demolished.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, for a high-rise condominium or whatever. But it was the site of the famous NASCAR meeting. You know, they had a very. I was rereading that account this morning in Driving with the Devil, the name of the chapter for those that's read it 100 times like me, is the first thing we knew, Bill France owned NASCAR. That's the name of the chapter, and that's a quote from that is a quote from Mr. Raymond Parks. The next thing we knew, Bill France owned NASCAR, which was the plan from the
beginning. Yeah, that was his. That was Bill France's plan from the beginning. They just didn't know it.
They just didn't know. He had invited some models from the Daytona Modeling Institute.
Yeah. Is that what we go call them?
He had invited to entertain some of the guests, including Mr. Parks, who never actually made it to the Ebony Room. That would have helped to have at least been in the meeting room.
That's why he didn't know that Bill France owned NASCAR.
There you go.
He'd been sidelined.
Oh, he was. He was pretty sharp, wasn't he? He was.
Well, in hindsight, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to NASCAR.
Oh, absolutely.
No
one else could have done it. No one else would have done it. Nobody else would have gotten away with it.
Yep.
Because it had to have his kind of, dare I call it, management skills.
Yep. Well, yeah.
Well, that worked.
He was the perfect man for the job.
Absolutely. Yep. Because a weaker person and the thing would have fallen apart, a stronger person and the thing would have fallen apart. Everybody would have walked away. But as it turned out, it's the best thing that could have happened to auto racing in the South, well, probably in the nation.
In the nation,
At the time.
Yeah. He it would be, you know, this was in 1947, but it wasn't too long before he started, or it became obvious they were going to have a racetrack at Daytona, that they couldn't keep using the beach road course. Was definitely, its days was numbered.
Yep.
Even in the late 40s, they could see that development was coming and all of that. So the notion of building a big track was really on the forefront.
How long was the big track under construction?
1 year.
1 year.
And Bill, his son, Bill Jr., wrote in somewhere that I have read often that at the end of 1959 or whenever it was, we had spent $6 million, none of which we had at the beginning of that year. That's a lot of money in 1958.
That's a tremendous
59.
Amount of money in 58.
That would have been 58 because they opened in February of 59.
Right.
So they spent $6 million that they did not have, and no fun or no nothing.
He raised it in a year's time, too.
And, of course, in 1959 when they opened, it looks nothing like it looked today.
No.
I mean, everything in the infield was dirt, for example.
But much like Charlotte did for years and years after they opened it. Yeah, there was nothing in the infield but dirt. They didn't have any pit facilities, did they? They had a pit road, but as far as garage facilities and stuff so forth, they didn't have anything.
Nobody had them, really. They had some covered shelters at Darlington.
Yeah, same thing in Daytona.
But they didn't have no
garage. But they didn't have enough for every car. It was just for some of them.
Yeah, even for years and years at Charlotte, all they had was a pole barn, just a roof.
Right.
Supported by poles, and so if you were, and there again, they didn't have enough for 43 cars. Actually, it was more than that, because when you start getting your different series is in there, now it's all air conditioned, enclosed, roll up doors, fancy. That may be what killed them. I don't know.
I think there was more interest back in the day. Definitely. Bill Jr. also said that we done pretty good at Daytona from the opening get-go, but it was so tight. If we had had any rain outs, they never did for the first 5 or 6 years, he said it would have really, if we had had a rain out, he don't know how the story would have played out, but they were lucky, and they were, you know, hard workers, they were visionaries.
Well, that's something that the average race fan probably never thinks about, is how much of an investment it takes to get a race to race day. And if you have a rainout, there's a whole lot of that investment you can't recoup.
Right. You can't come out. Nobody wins on a rainout. No. Everybody loses.
It's a wonder there's not more rainouts than there are when you think about it.
Absolutely.
It might have been the mid-60s before Daytona ever had any rain at all in the race, in the 500. 60... it seemed like the 66 race was rain shortened.
I don't remember that many times raining, period, ever.
Yeah, to now.
And when you think about Florida, even in the wintertime, especially for the July race.
Or that July race, it rains for...
For every time, every day. But the fact that they had such a long string of no rain outs or no rain outs, maybe some rain delays or whatnot, it's just hard to comprehend, especially in Florida.
So all of that, we're coming up on the 70th anniversary.
So listen to this. History was made at the Daytona 500 on Sunday. This is February 26, 2012. But not the kind that anyone at Daytona International Speedway wanted to see. For the first time in the event's long history, the Great American Race has been postponed to Monday because of weather.
That was 2012.
2012. It's amazing what you can Google.
That was the, and I'll tell you what, that was the race, the famous race that Juan Pablo ran into
Oh, is that the one he ran into the jet dryer on?
That was it, because it was a Monday night. They run
jet dryer
the next
killer.
Night. Yeah, that's when that was.
What year was it that didn't they postpone it because of the forest fires down there?
That was the 400.
Was it the 400?
That was the July race. Yeah, forest fire. But yeah, Juan Pablo took out the jet dryer. That was the same race.
That might have been the first rain out and rescheduled date, but there were several years
rain,
where there was rain delay.
Yeah, there was. You're right. Even in the 60s, there were some of them.
But, and there were some that were rain shortened, too.
Yep.
They would just call it when it started
but
raining.
For the first 5 or 6 years, there was zero weather. They had beautiful weather every time. And Bill Jr. said that was very critical to everything, because there wasn't a lot of blue sky to be had in that whole situation. So Smokey Unick was always he was funny, but he was a critic of Big Bill, but he was also, through all of that, he had a lot of respect for him. He recognized what he had done, and was the only one that probably could have done
it. The race has been shortened 4 times due to rain. 1965, 66, 2003, and 2009, and once in response to the energy crisis in 1974.
Yep. Gas shortage.
Yeah.
Think about that, man. That's pretty phenomenal.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's excellent. That is excellent. They've had a very good Daytona has been a success story on that front for sure.
Success, luck.
Yep.
All of that.
Big time luck in a big bucket.
Yep.
And weather. Hot, cold weather.
Yeah.
And it can be 30 degrees or it can be 85 degrees.
So here's an article, most notable weather delayed races. Guy was looking for something to write about. That's cool.
Yeah.
The rain shortened NASCAR's most prestigious race, 162 laps, February 2009, Daytona 500. Phoenix, 1988. Rusty Wallace won this race that was shortened by two 257 laps, claiming the only win of his career at Phoenix International Raceway, October 1998. Wallace beat out Mark Martin and the late Dale Earnhardt to earn the win. Phoenix, 2015. Think Phoenix, 98, 2015. Dale Earnhardt Jr. hands out high fives after he was declared a late night winner in another rain-shortened race at Phoenix, November 2015. Atlanta, 2008. Race fan Linda Horn tries to catch snowflakes in the garage area at Atlanta Motor Speedway, March 2008. New Hampshire, 2009. A young Joey Logano is almost in disbelief after learning he's been declared the winner of the rain-shortened race in New Hampshire in June 2009. It was Logano's first victory in NASCAR's Premier Series. Bristol, 2006. Crew members admire the handiwork after enough snow fell to build a snowman. Or is it a snow dog? They're not sure. March 2006. Pocono, 2016. Fog shrouds Pocono Raceway. Okay. Charlotte, 2009. David Ruderman, as they await the... I remember that race. I was watching that race. David Ruderman won after a rain-shortened race. Daytona, 2015. Austin Dillon crashes in a dynamic wreck during the Coke 0400 Daytona 2015. Rain delayed the dropping of the green flag until 11:42. Michigan 2007, originally scheduled to be run on Sunday, the race at Michigan International Speedway in August 2007 became the first modern-day NASCAR race to be run on what day? Trivia, people.
Probably a Tuesday.
Yeah, you win. Ding, 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 ding.
What did I win?
Yeah, because there have been a few that have been postponed to Monday.
Yeah. Daytona 1988, Jeff Gordon celebrates a rare October race. Daytona 1998, the Pepsi 400 had to be rescheduled from July to October because of wildfires that Florida in the summer. Remember that? That's what you were talking about. Daytona 500 2012, the already delayed by one day and most of another day because of rain. Juan Pablo Montoya famously lit up a Monday night when he ran into a jet dryer under caution during the 2012 Daytona 500. Matt Kenseth won his second Daytona 500, both of which have been marked by rainy Florida weather. That's the 12th top weather-related, 12 memorable weather-delayed races in NASCAR by a fellow named Joe Menzer. Joe, nice job. He wrote that April 23rd, 2017. Wow, that's pretty good, man.
It is.
And I don't care what track you're at. It seems like if you have a rain delay and you're not sitting in the stands, you're in ankle-deep mud.
So, I used to have tickets to Bristol, okay, every year. And you guys who watched this on TV weren't there. Remember the endless wave. We entertained, the entire crowd entertained itself for, seemed like hours, doing the wave around the stadium in the rain. I say it was pouring down the rain. We had a blast. Yeah, we did. We had a few beers, but we had a blast. We had a good time.
Believe me, I can attest to the fact that it does not take too much effort to start a wave at a racetrack.
Yeah.
I got to be a master at it. I could start a wave at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Well, it really sucks when you do and nobody follows. Well, you look kind
of
stupid.
I'd have
when that
a
happens.
Bit of trouble. Yeah. I could walk out on the track when we had some sort of a delay. We had some sort of a, I think it was a dignitary delay at one point, and the stands were full at Charlotte, and everybody was just sort of sitting there twiddling their thumbs. The weather was pretty and it was hot, and they were ready to get on with it. We're just sitting there. And I sort of walked out in front of the stage and threw my arms up, and I thought, I started a wave. So until the show started, I just played with the crowd, and we had a good time. I had the front stretch going.
They were all saying, hey, who's that goober?
Yeah. I don't know who he is, but he's waving to us.
Hey, who's that goober down there waving at us?
Some kind of goober.
Yep. But I was aware of the fact that I could stir them up. Between that and the PA announcer, we could go out there and start building something right before a show, doing something that if you stretched your imagination, might be a little dangerous.
Speaking of stretching your imagination, we got 13 minutes, 12 minutes left to stretch this show out.
Well, I got 30 seconds worth.
Well, let's have it.
Next week, next Tuesday, assuming we will be here.
We will.
It'll be the Tuesday, the show before Christmas, and I won't be here. So
it'll be the show before Christmas and all through the house.
Yeah,
Hugh
right.
was not here.
Right. I'm going to Outer Banks. Kitty Hawk.
What's the occasion?
My son's looking to buy a house there.
Huh?
I believe it. Kitty Hawk. Called me today and says, I found a boat I want to buy. It's a 30-foot boat. Can I leave it at your house? I said, no, I don't have that big a driveway. But anyway, I just wanted to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And for all of the NASCAR bashing that we've done for the last 12 months.
Not us.
Yeah,
no,
us.
No,
us.
Not us.
Yeah,
speak
especially
for yourself.
Me.
Especially you.
Especially me.
Speak for yourself.
But I think we're all, at least in some form or fashion, thankful that NASCAR exists and still exists. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show to bash them.
Yep. And it is radio tonight. We've got cameras and video going.
Yeah, but, we've even got video.
But I don't even know if Facebook's recording it. There's no Facebook pages. I just went to Twitter, and everybody over there in Twitter is reporting that all the Facebook pages are down. So it ain't just us. It ain't just mine.
It ain't just us. Yep. At least we know you paid the rent. It wasn't
mine. I have 115 Facebook pages, sir. Oh, my God. None of them are up.
I don't even want to know why you have that many.
Because you can. Yeah.
Here's an article we need to touch on before we disband. Las Vegas Motor Speedway, September 2018. That's okay. Next September. NASCAR weekend just got bigger. For the first time ever, NASCAR's K&N Pro Series will race on dirt on Thursday, September 13th at the dirt track at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
That's cool.
Yep.
So there. So
yeah.
What does that mean? That means other than, you know, kind of a quantum shift of sorts.
Yep.
K&N West Series.
We've seen that happening gradually, you know, the shift back to the short tracks. And, I was reading somebody's post on Facebook the other day talking about how bad the short tracks are doing. I'm thinking, holy cow, man, where were you 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Because I can tell you that from what I've seen, it's much better than it was.
It is, at least the ones I've seen too.
Yeah.
And a lot of touring series have become more interesting to people in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that's a trend. You see that happening. Yeah.
NASCAR has, they've got to agree that they've got to do something to shake up what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, everything, the trucks, the Xfinity, and the Cup.
Or do they just ride it as long as they can ride it and milk it as long as
they
can?
They all look and act and people are exactly the same.
So, we got 8 minutes left. And we got into this discussion right before we went on the air. In that we've been doing this 10 years, and the interest in what we do and in the history has waned considerably. The number of people that seem to be interested in it have, across all platforms, has declined. Why? Okay. And I told you before we went on the air that I have a theory that I think it goes with the interest in the sport. I mean, if you think about where we were 10 years ago and what point, you know, the sport had already begun to decline, but none of us in 2000, 2001, 2002, even up until 2004 would have ever thought that NASCAR would do anything except continue to explode in growth. You know, and we were all proud of that, and that made us proud of
history,
of the history and everything that we had seen and been part of. And it's, if it's not good now, how can, you know, there's just not a lot of people proud of it anymore, you know? Still proud of the history, but.
Remember in the very early days of Racers Reunion, y'all had this contest. It went on a long time, and I forgot what the rules were, but the grand prize was two tickets to Bristol.
Keebler and Kellogg's provided that. I had a good friend of mine who worked for them. And they were tickets to in a suite
at the night race.
At the night race, yeah.
Yeah. But that was a very highly sought after, hard to get thing.
And damn near impossible.
Back then you still had to be on a waiting list to get Bristol tickets.
Yeah.
You know?
So I mean that was 10 years ago.
Yep. I remember back what years was that? Back in the day, way back when Bristol was really humping at its peak. I mean, you had to sign up for your tickets way, way in advance, a year in advance, because if you didn't get them, they went back into the pool, and all the people that were on the list have been waiting forever got a shot at them, you know? And they were such in demand that it was a line item in my divorce to my second wife. She got the Bristol tickets.
Weren't they available tickets you got the in shaft. A lottery?
Yeah. Yep. But she got the Bristol tickets in the divorce.
Did she like to go to Bristol?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Just think about that. If your wife got the Bristol tickets in a divorce.
And was happy about it.
You must be.
Yeah. And brag to her friends about how good the divorce went.
Yeah. If your wife said, I got the Bristol tickets in the divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, you are not by yourself. I know at least three people, including you, who have have either won or lost their Bristol ticket.
Shows how much I needed to get out of that mess, right?
I'll even give up Bristol tickets.
I'll give up my Bristol tickets to get out of here. Yeah. Golly. What else do you want?
Yeah, that sword cuts both ways. Yeah.
Does it ever?
Oh, my gosh. I don't care who you are. That right? You got to think that's funny.
That is funny.
If you're a race fan, you appreciate that.
Yeah, no kidding.
But now you could get tickets.
Yeah.
And I remember year after year after year, the same people sat in the same seats in the same place every year.
Yeah, the same way it was in Darlington when I had tickets for so many Z years.
And this one guy for 10 years, every time Dale Earnhardt would go around, he'd stand up and give him the bird. And the guy next to him would stand up and hold up the three fingers. I mean,
they never fouled one another.
That never did. No.
Well, it was the same way at Charlotte. I only attended one race and sat in the grandstands from all the years that from 61 on. But I went with a good friend of mine who had long held these two tickets. And it was like going to old home week. Yeah. His wife was sick and couldn't go. And he asked me if I wanted to go use that other ticket. And we spent 20 minutes, him just introducing me around to all the people around the stand. We got there and sat down. And then, of course, the money started changing hands because they had a huge pool for who was going to win the race. You know,
that's always the fun part of it.
There was always a big pool going on, just like there was on Pitt Road. Pitt Road security at Charlotte had a big pool going, and it was $1,000. And of course, they invited me to draw one time, and I had Bill Elliott the year that the million went into effect, and he was scheduled to win it and came within a few laps and cut a brake line on the last pit stop, and there went my.
I was just thinking, my mind was wondering, you talk about Charlotte, and I know we were also talking about earlier repeating stories in 10 years. How many times do you repeat the same story? I know I've repeated this one, but I remember one of the fondest memories was getting to go to Charlotte and for the first time having radio so that we could hear the drivers.
Yes.
And I can remember I listened to Childress and Earnhardt, and it was amazing how little they talked.
Yeah.
They didn't say anything, you know. And Earnhardt, we were waiting to hear what Earnhardt was going to do when he come down the pit row, you know. And he says, put two in the right rear. Okay, that's all he said. And I picked up on it, what he said, put two in the right rear. So we went back out, and when he went in, and by the time he got around, went in turn three on the restart, he was squirrely all over. And he says, Richard, yeah, Dale, did you put two in the right rear? Dale, we took two out. That was it. That's all it was said, man. That was all it was said. He says, Dad, we took two out.
Of course, nowadays, now they talk in all kinds of rhymes and riddles and codes and everything.
And I know I've told this one before. We were going off, and we'll tell this one again. I was listening to Bill Elliott and Ernie. Okay? Ernie was spotting for Bill. And there was a crash on the back stretch. And Ernie is going, Bill, 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 go low, Bill, Bill, go low. And Ernie said, Bill said, Ernie, shut the F up, it's me. we got to go on that one. All right, people, it's been fun. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it and appreciate all you guys for coming down and doing this. And as always, we'd like to say a special thank you to the men and women that serve in our military. We really appreciate you for what you're doing so that we can do this. Each and every one of you, good night and God bless.
In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is...